Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, O'Connor and Company.
105.9 FM, WMAL. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of November, Thanksgiving week here in the nation's capital. Buckle up. A heck of a 3 hours in front of us here before we hand it off to the incredible Chris Plant. 635, Sean Kennedy, president of Virginia's for Safe Communities. 705 brings us Terry Schilling, American Principles Project. 805, he's James Golden. You know him best as Bo Snerdly from the late, great Rush Limbaugh show. Can't wait to talk to Bo. And then at 835, Congressman Mark Meadows, former chief of staff to President Donald Trump. I am Larry O'Connor alongside Amber Athey as we get rolling here. It's 607 on WMAL. Amber started yesterday's program focusing quite a bit on the horrific events of Saturday afternoon in Waukesha, Wisconsin. This was a terrible story where somebody, we didn't have the name of the suspect at the time. I mean, we did, but it hadn't been confirmed by the police yet. So we were trying to be very cautious and judicious and not being like so many people in the media who just get way too far out in front of a story because they want to be first and then they're wrong. And we'd rather be right. But we did talk a little bit about what was being reported about this suspect at the time and his track record and his criminal record and what the police and media were both saying that were sort of contradicting each other about this guy who drove an SUV wantonly into a Christmas parade, plowing down over 40 people, killing five, hospitalizing over 40. It was horrific. We all saw a video of it. And we knew that that's a huge story. I mean, this is a dominant story. And by primetime last night, it was barely mentioned on most of the broadcast and cable news networks. And it's weird because it appears, and I know you wrote about this yesterday very beautifully and succinctly at Spectator, it appears the reason the media stopped talking about it is because they got more information.
Yeah.
That they actually, right. like they received more facts and then decided based on those facts, the story wasn't important.
Yeah, well, the facts were inconvenient. And they will try to say, oh, this is a local story. But this, I mean, this has parallels to the 2016 Berlin terror attack where a terrorist drove a van through a Christmas parade. It's a very similar MO.
Remember that.
And what we found out yesterday after we went off the air is that the suspect was confirmed to be a man named Darrell Brooks. Well, Darrell Brooks has a long criminal history dating back to 1999 when he became a felon, where he was convicted with domestic violence charge. He continued a career of crime and most recently in early November was arraigned on charges again related to domestic violence, fleeing police, reckless endangerment, and bail jumping. However, instead of being locked away, the Milwaukee jail released him on $1,000 bond.
Yeah.
Just 2 days before the incident.
This was, yeah, you said early November. That, or you mean 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Is when he was arrested. And by the way, the wanton endangerment, that was he tried to run somebody over.
In a parking lot. Intentionally tried to run over a woman in a parking lot. And yet, before we even knew this guy's name or his criminal history yesterday, the media was reporting that he had run through the Christmas parade because he was fleeing another crime scene.
Yeah.
So they tried to make it sound unintentional.
Right.
I mean, even before knowing about his history of running people over, this just made no sense at all.
And fleeing another crime scene, again, they had no source on that.
Mm-hmm.
They said sources told them, but they didn't tell us who those sources were. But fleeing another crime scene, there's almost they didn't say it explicitly, but there's definitely an implication there, or maybe I inferred it, that the police were chasing him. In other words, if the police, because we hear this a lot, cops shouldn't be chasing suspects. These high-speed chases are dangerous. I mean, when I first heard the media saying he was fleeing a crime scene, my first thought was, oh, so he's trying to get away from the cops, and that's why he plowed into this parade. I mean, the two don't necessarily go together, but that's the image that was painted, which it implies that the police were partially responsible mm-hmm. for this.
And the Waukesha police later confirmed that no one was chasing this guy. And even so, the idea that if you're trying to get away from a crime scene and you're trying to avoid detection or get away from the police, that you would go to the most populated area,
right.
run over 40 people, there's more police at the Christmas parade than probably anywhere else in Waukesha at the time.
Yeah.
You don't turn down a side street. You don't stop your car. And then after you're done plowing over the 40 people, you calmly back your car into a driveway about a 5 to 10 minute drive from the Christmas parade. Everything about it was completely illogical.
Yeah. And I remember, I believe it was an old friend of mine on social, on Twitter, RB Pundit, who we've been friends all the way back to the Breitbart days. He posted a map of the downtown Waukesha area that shows and where this supposed crime that he was fleeing, this incident, may have taken place. And there are a whole lot of other places he could have driven. It seems like a real deliberate act to plow into a parade route.
And the police said in their press conference yesterday that this was intentional. They've charged him with 5 counts of intentional homicide. And I have seen no evidence, by the way, that there was ever another crime in the area.
Yeah.
No one has been able to release police scanner reports or crime reports that indicate the event that they're talking about ever even happened.
But you'll still hear people on social media, and I don't know if they, well, they weren't saying it on primetime news last night because they just stopped talking about the story altogether, which we'll get to in a moment. But you don't hear, people were repeating this whole thing that he was fleeing a knife fight. That was the first story that we heard late Sunday night and well into the day yesterday. He was fleeing a knife fight, fleeing a knife fight. You would think, first of all, that there would be some sort of reportage of the knife fight. We would know who was involved. We would, if you're a journalist on the ground there, you would try to find out, okay, let's talk about the people in the knife fight. What was the beef that you had with it? Nothing. Zero. Nada. And I think you made the point yesterday. It's like, if you're fleeing a knife fight, how far and fast do you need to drive to be in safety? I mean, there's just so much they can do with the knife.
Yeah, I mean, getting in your car and locking the doors can generally pretty get much, you away from a knife attacker,
pretty much,
I would think.
Mitigates the imminent threat of the knife, unless it's like a machete that can plow through steel and glass. But none of this really fully explains why they just stop reporting it altogether. I mean, if you watch primetime CNN, maybe you got a couple of mentions of it. Just an update. Here's some video from the police chief's press conference. But then they immediately go to the January 6th commission has subpoenaed Roger Stone and Alex Jones because, you know, that's the burning issue of the day.
Right.
So why? What is it about this suspect that immediately they were deciding it had to be hands off, nothing to see here?
Yeah, well, it's not only the fact that this was preventable because he was released on such a low bond, but also whenever an attack like this happens, journalists are always trying to find out more about the individual so that they can try to suss out a motive and get a sense as to why this crime mm-hmm. happened. You go to this guy's social media and you look at his history, and he is a virulently anti-white individual. He does not like white people. In fact, he has a deep, intense hatred for them. We don't know that that was his motive. We don't know, you know, what caused him to drive his car through this Christmas parade. I suspect it wasn't fleeing a knife attack, but that's relevant information when you're trying to find out how someone ran over 40 people.
There's no evidence of the knife effect, a knife attack, and yet that gets repeated. There is evidence that he harbors hatred toward white people based on his own social media footprint. And oh, by the way, he plowed through a parade of a predominantly white part of Wisconsin. And I believe all of the victims are white. And that's not mentioned and that's not reported. And I'm sorry, if this were a white driver who drove his vehicle into a predominantly black part of Milwaukee and killed and injured over 40 black people, I think they would report about his racist rants on social media.
They would already be calling them a white supremacist, domestic terrorist, and yet in this case,
right,
terrorism was ruled out in all of 5 minutes.
Yeah, in fact, we're going to talk about that. I mean, what makes a terrorist a terrorist? What makes an act of terrorism an act of terrorism? Does it only go to motive? And certainly, we can sort out a little bit of a motive or suspect a piece of motive here in a story like this. Early on in the reporting of it, you would think, and yet it's not even questioned. We want to get to that part of it in a moment. The attacks in Waukesha and why the media ignored it. But first, it's 6:15. 6:17, we return this conversation about the Waukesha attacks. The definition of terrorism is fascinating, and when the media decides to call a terrorist act is something that I think needs some analysis. But I just want to stop for a moment and just make sure that nobody misconstrues what Amber and I are saying here. You know, the family member of the dead woman in Waukesha, one of the dancing grannies there. Did you, you know, look at that group. They're just so joyful and wonderful. They don't care if the driver of this vehicle was black or white. It matters not to them. They've just lost their grandmother. The parents of a child who is lying in the hospital right now because they got hit by this car, they don't care about the race of the individual. Ultimately, they don't care about the motive. Not at this moment, obviously. This is a human tragedy that these people are dealing with. But when the media covers a story like this, and they always try to paint a broader narrative for their own political purposes, they certainly do care. Now, I would love to be in a post-racial America and a post-politicized America where this can just be a horrible tragedy, and eventually, when we get more facts, we can then figure it out and start discussing what it means in a larger context. But that's not the world we live in, Amber. We see, we just came off the Rittenhouse thing, and we saw exactly what the media did with that story without any evidence of Kyle Rittenhouse's motives, when it seemed obvious from the video evidence that he was acting in self-defense, but it took a year and a trial to get to that. So yeah, absolutely would be great for us not to have to focus on those things, but the fact is the media forces us to. That's the world we're living in, not the world we wish we lived in.
Yeah, because when we're trying to figure out why the media drops a story like this so quickly, you go back and look at their history, they are so quick to assign motive to, you know, white men who they believe are acting as terrorists. But when the motive is super obvious, just because it might be a person of color who's involved in the attack, the media claims they don't know the motive. I mean, FBI Assistant Director Andy McCabe was saying just last year that we may never know the motive of James Hodgkinson, because he was the shooter who, of course, tried to gun down Republicans at a baseball practice. Now, he wasn't a person of color, but he was someone associated with the Bernie Sanders campaign.
That was an attempted political assassination. He specifically sought out, where are the Republicans? And then started shooting the Republicans.
Yeah, he had a list. I mean, it's not hard to figure out.
We may never know why he did this. Maybe he doesn't like bad baseball.
Right. And then in San Bernardino, that terrorist attack, which was an Islamic terror attack, you had MSNBC's Chris Hayes and Pete Williams about how, you know, we have to be careful assigning a motive here.
Right.
I mean, they may have talked about, Allahu Akbar, but you can never be sure.
And listen, this guy, I mean, again, this has all the hallmarks of a terror attack. We've seen this replicated in England, in France, as you said, at that time they were motivated by ISIS. We don't know what the motivation is, but certainly the attack itself inflicted terror upon the community, to the people who were injured and killed, and to their family members. And here's why it is a terrorist attack. Because the next time you go to a parade in your community, you're going to have your head on a swivel, aren't you? It's going to be in the back of your mind. That's why when you go on an airplane right now, it's in the back of your mind. You're looking at other people on the plane because of the terror attacks of 9/11. Terror attacks are meant to inflict terror upon the citizens who are living peacefully in a free country like ours. This was a terror attack, period.
It's something that tries to change the way people live their everyday lives, to make them live in fear. And that's exactly what happened here. And you're right. The rise of vehicle attacks is something that's been happening with particularly ISIS terrorists in Europe, and Syrian terrorists. And I think that the way that this particular attack played out is so similar to those that it was very irresponsible for people to immediately rule that out as a motive.
2 days after the Rittenhouse verdict, an hour away roughly from Kenosha, a black suspect killing 5 white people, injuring another 40, and he has a social media trail of vitriol against, racially motivated vitriol, in his own words, on social media. And the media immediately says nothing to see here.
And we, of course, can't discount the fact that criminal justice reform is involved in this, too, because this guy was released on low bail despite having a significantly violent criminal history.
That's right. And how many days did Kyle Rittenhouse sit in prison while he waited to be at
86, I think he said? Yeah.
622 on WMAL. News out of Maryland here yesterday in terms of politics, Amber. President Trump formally endorsed candidate Dan Cox, assemblyman, for governor, sort of early on in the proceedings for a Trump endorsement. But there it is. He's backing Dan Cox. Larry Hogan, current governor, took to Twitter and said, "Personally, I'd prefer endorsements from people who didn't lose Maryland by 33 points." A little spicy,
it's Maryland. I mean,
it is
not very fair.
I don't know if that helps Larry Hogan for his Beyond Maryland hopes necessarily, I don't think he's formally endorsed Kelly Schultz, but I think he is backing his own cabinet secretary, Kelly Schultz. And meanwhile, as David Drucker reports over at the Washington Examiner, Michael Steele is still possibly going to run. And I just find that fascinating.
As a Republican?
Yeah, it's 628. Coming up, we've got Sean Kennedy, president of Virginians for Safe Communities, talk about the Fairfax County prosecutor and their stance about crime in our neighborhoods. Keep it here. 6:37 on WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Good Tuesday morning this Thanksgiving week to you. At 7:05, Terry Schilling is going to join us, American Principles Project. 8:05, the one and only legendary Bo Snerdly. From the Rush Limbaugh Show, James Golden is going to be our guest. Can't wait to talk to him. At 8:35, I also can't wait to talk to our old friend Mark Meadows, Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina. His last job here in town was as chief of staff to President Trump. We'll speak with Meadows coming up then. I'm Larry O'Connor alongside Amber Athey this Tuesday morning. Amber, I think there's no doubt that there's a rise in crime in this area, certainly in Northern Virginia. It's one of the reasons, I think, that people were looking for a new direction and a new way to go with Glenn Youngkin. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I live in Arlington, and I've seen it firsthand. It's quite disturbing. You leave D.C. because you're hoping for a safer neighborhood, and unfortunately, it tends to follow you.
When Steve Descano was running for D.A. in Fairfax County, he actually was challenged by an independent candidate. He didn't run as a Republican. He actually was a Democrat. And the former D.A., Commonwealth Attorney, I should say, the Commonwealth Attorney in Fairfax County, endorsed this independent candidate. I forget his name now. I apologize. Because he saw how dangerous Steve Descano was and how he was going to execute his job. Now, sadly, Descano, because of the money that he had, he won. And we've seen the direct repercussions of his stewardship of that office in Fairfax County. Ditto Parisa Degani Tofte in Arlington County. Joining us right now to discuss, and we're going to focus on one particular case because it's a great sort of icon of what we're dealing with here. Joining us to discuss it is Sean Kennedy, president of Virginians for Safe Communities. Mr. Kennedy, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Amber, for having me.
I saw you mentioned in right up at the Washington Free Beacon about a gentleman named Karim Clayton, 44 years old. He was arrested multiple times here. He was known as the CVS Bandit. Tell me about this case in particular and how it points out exactly how law and order is being ignored right now by those who are actually charged with enforcing it.
Well, since Steve Descano and Parisa took over in Arlington and Fairfax, Karim Clayton has been arrested 24 times in both those counties combined and been released each time with almost no time or with time served to amount to less than 3 months in total jail time over those 18 to 20 months. And what's shocking is the only breaks in his criminal history over that period are when he's incarcerated. And he has robbed multiple CVSs. Most recently, he was arrested for a robbery. And then the next day was released that same evening and went on to commit armed robbery at another CVS the next morning, pulling a knife on the clerk at the CVS in order to continue his robbery. And what is so striking about his case that's just mind-boggling is the fact that Karim Clayton is a resident of the District of Columbia, but not just a resident of the District of Columbia. He has the honor of being on the District of Columbia's sex offender registry, meaning the police are tracking him and his information is public because he abused a 14-year-old girl a few years ago and was wearing an ankle monitor during at least some of the crimes he committed in Northern Virginia and was then released on bond for. If not all of them, because he was subsequently arrested in D.C. for tampering with the ankle monitor that was supposed to be on him, meaning they picked him up with an ankle bracelet and the DAs let him go for subsequent crimes, even though he was a known parolee probationer in the District of Columbia.
Amber, am I to understand that Karim Clayton, during this ridiculous 24 arrest crime spree in Northern Virginia, he crossed state lines? to do this. I thought that was the end all and be all.
Good point, Larry. I mean, I find it interesting that a lot of times when, you know, these local attorneys talk about crimes like the robberies, they say, oh, well, it's not, he's a nonviolent offender.
Right.
But I mean, you see how quickly this can escalate. His most recent robbery, he was armed. I mean, Sean, talk about, I mean, just the need for prevention in some of these repeat offenders.
I mean, it's something that sort of boggles the mind, because these DAs don't see the public or crime victims as their clients, for want of a better word, but they see the criminal defendants as their clients.
Right.
So they are vociferous advocates for criminals, and that shows up in the court. I mean, both Parisa and Steve Descano and Buddha Bibarat were all members, or the, in the case of Parisa, the head of the public defenders or the defense bars in their respective counties. They've stopped, they've never stopped being defense attorneys. Now they're just supposed to be representing the public.
Now, listen, I want to be fair and honest here. I remember covering these races about a year and a half ago. That there should be no surprise here. This is how they ran for office. They told us exactly what they were going to do, and they were pretty well-funded. Well, I know you're not supposed to mention George Soros' name ever, but it's just the fact that through George Soros and organizations that he has set up, these guys were given huge bankrolls to run for office, right? I mean, can we even say that, Sean?
Well, it's funny because oftentimes people say, oh, that's not true, it's a progressive organization, all that. Well, Virginia, as they like to say, is the wild, wild west in terms of campaign contributions. It's unlimited. George Soros is the sole donor to the super PAC that gave all three of them combined $2.2 million. Buddha Bibarai and Loudon, who obviously is infamous now for the sex assault cases in the schools, got $800,000, and respectively, Descano and Parisa got about $600,000. So we are talking about a huge amount of money, and it's all from George Soros. It's in his name. You can look it up on vpap.org. It says George Soros once you click through from the Real Justice and Safety PAC. It's all George Soros' dollars. It's not any other friend of his or anything else. It is directly George Soros. But this is not unique to Northern Virginia, unfortunately, and we just saw this tragedy play out in terms of bail in Milwaukee just yesterday.
Yep.
The Christmas parade killer was released on low bail after committing a violent assault with a vehicle against his girlfriend. And the same guy who signs the same letters of advocacy as Descano and Parisa and Buddha, and the same guy who goes to the same conferences as Parisa, Steve, and Buddha, is releasing people who go on to kill children and old ladies at a Christmas parade.
Yeah.
Because they have no concern for us. Their concern is compassion for those who victimize others, because they're mentally ill, or they're drug addicted, or they're somehow oppressed. But at some point, you have to stand up for reasonableness and soundness.
Yep.
And the sad part is, we're talking about high-profile instances of ridiculous crime. But most of the victims, we just saw the District of Columbia hit 200 homicides. Just this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the victims of violent acts in this country are poor minority Americans.
Right.
They're not people who live in rich parts of Fairfax County or Loudoun, who, of course, don't deserve to be victimized either. But we're not protecting those who we supposedly want to protect. We're just protecting the criminals and the predators.
Well said.
And in this case, Kareem Clayton and this individual Brooks in Milwaukee, they were victimizing other people in their community or members of their family. They're violent, deranged individuals who deserve to be in prison. They don't deserve to be out on the streets. The same goes for the sex offenders we saw over the summer with Steve Descano.
Yeah,
I know for a fact through contacts I have in immigration, all three of them were illegal immigrants. All three of the individuals that Descano gave leniency to who committed child sex offenses. But all three of their victims were also young Hispanic girls. Like, they're the children of immigrants. They're part of the same community. That's who they're picking on. Those people deserve to be defended just the same.
Amen. We got to leave it there, but we need candidates to step forward now to start raising money and start campaigning now, early on, to right this wrong. Sean Kennedy, we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining us from Virginians for Safe Communities. It is 6:45. Amber, you'll remember the events of Charlottesville, of course, in President Trump's first term, and there was much discussion. Most of it lies about what President Trump said there about the events that led up to the violence in Charlottesville. Many people said that he called neo-Nazis and white supremacists very fine people. He never did. He said the opposite, in fact. He said that he said, I'm not talking about the white supremacists and the neo-Nazis.
I denounce them totally.
Exactly. They should be denounced totally. Well said. That's a direct quote. But he also made a point. He said, listen, there were people down there of good faith who were not neo-Nazis, who were not white supremacists, who really do believe that there's a problem removing Robert E. Lee's statue from the town square of Charlottesville. And just because they want to preserve that and they believe they're acting for preserving their heritage and their history, that doesn't de facto make them white supremacists. And then he said, what's next? George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, right? And it's a fair question to ask. He was roundly ridiculed and mocked about that, right?
Yes, he was.
I'm looking at headlines here that were pushed out by the NBC News at the time. I'll read it. It said, I don't have it straight in front of me, but it said, why Trump is wrong about Jefferson and Washington being next.
And right? I believe there were PolitiFact and other fact checkers talking about how this claim was false and that it was never going to happen and that he was just trying to excuse the Robert E. Lee protesters.
Yesterday, the Thomas Jefferson statue was removed from New York City Hall.
Oh.
Yesterday, the statue of the author of the Declaration of Independence, the third president of the United States, was removed from City Hall in New York City because they make room for somebody who is a bigger giant in American history than the man who crafted the Declaration of Independence. I want to tell you something. For those of you who have never been to Manhattan or haven't walked the, you know, it's a great city for walking the Revolutionary War Trail. I know everyone says Boston is the place to go. New York is incredible. You can see so many historic moments, and there is that moment when the Declaration of Independence was read aloud to the people of New York in downtown New York, and they got so fired up by it that they went and tore down the statue of King George. Here's the irony. They tore down the statue of the tyrant King George for our revolution and melted it down to make musket balls to arm the Continental Army. The place where that occurred, where they tore down the statue of King George, it's just across the street from New York City Hall, where they just tore down Thomas Jefferson's statue, where that declaration, the man who wrote that declaration that was read, that inspired the crowd to tear down King George's statue. We've come full circle.
It's
now.
Very disturbing. Do we know who they're going to replace him with?
Probably
Stacey Abrams.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. The way things are going, it'll be Stacey or Barack Obama. But here's this is John Oliver's show on HBO. When Donald Trump said the thing about Jefferson,
the president's concern seems to be that tearing down statues leads to a slippery slope.
This week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Okay, well, I'll tell you where it stops. Somewhere. Anytime someone asks, where does it stop? The answer is always, somewhere. You might let your kid have Twizzlers, but not inject black tar heroin. You don't just go, well, after the Twizzlers, where does it stop?
I do love people with foreign accents lecturing us about our freedoms here, by the way.
Especially when they're British.
Yeah, it never gets old. And now we have the answer. See, that's the thing. When you make the rhetorical argument about the slippery slope and you ask rhetorically, where does it end? There's a reason for that, because you have to have an answer. And the answer isn't just somewhere, because here, listen, Trump said next week it's Thomas Jefferson. He was off by a couple of years, but it was yesterday. Thomas Jefferson's statue no longer standing. So now, I mean, I'm sorry to offend John Oliver and all of his fans who love him and laugh at everything he says and clap like stupid trained seals, but here we are in Washington, D.C. What is the moral and principled argument about going downtown and tearing down the statue at the Jefferson Memorial? Is there one?
Or the Lincoln Memorial. That might be next.
It's 6:53 on WMAL. I know it can be hard to understand different roofing prices when you get contractors out there to give you a bid. You know, you always want to get three contractors, right? And because you want to have competitive bids. It's okay, Amber. You don't have to. I mean, but you do know you've heard that this is a thing.
I've seen it happen, yeah.
You have. You've seen the whole competitive bidding process.
Oh, yeah. My parents redid their house recently.
So now if you're getting the three competitive bids, it's so you can compare which one you have the best comfort level with, which one's going to have the best price. Make sure you get one of those bids for your roof from New Look Home Design. See, Patrick Fingles, they have the Goldilocks price. Patrick's put together such an amazing team that gives you a roofing price that's just right. They also give you line-by-line pricing. You know exactly what you're paying for. There's no guesswork. There's no hidden charges. It's total price transparency. You can trust it down to the exact square footage. That's why Meredith and I chose New Look for our home. And right now, you'll save 50% on all roofing materials. You'll get 0% financing for qualified homeowners. And well, New Look's going to beat those other two guys. They will beat any qualified contractor's price. Give New Look a call, 800-279-5300, or visit newlookhomedesign.com. Amber, we mentioned yesterday about ESPN's reaction to the Rittenhouse verdict because, you know, you can't watch a basketball game without taking 5 minutes to hear the commentators comment on a murder trial. And we pointed out all of the things they got wrong and how inane and how stupid so many of the things that they were saying. And one of the examples was this guy, Richard Jefferson. He won a championship with the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers. That would be a LeBron James Cleveland Cavalier team. Otherwise, they would never even be in the championship game. Here's what he had to say.
I think the scariest part about this is that by saying that he is not guilty, they are saying that everything he did was lawful. And that's the part that worries me. Like, they were trying to not paint him. He was a kid that took a gun across state lines and went and did what he did. And they are saying that that is lawful.
And, of course, it's at that moment when anyone who was following the trial starts screaming at the television, yeah. Right, and say, oh. Well, I got to say, because we made fun of these guys and we called them out and explained why this is a problem. This is part of the problem. If you're only getting your news from ESPN, you're getting a lie, and no wonder you're angry. Well, I want to hand it to Richard Jefferson. The next day, he took to Twitter and he apologized. He said, hey, I got this wrong. I made a mistake. I was misinformed. I thought he took the weapon across state lines. It's not at all what occurred. And he, you know, he admitted it and apologized on Twitter for getting that wrong. And good for him.
Yeah, very rare, very refreshing. I think we should applaud that kind of behavior because it's so... very rarely often that we see that happen.
Yeah, although I would say it would be great if ESPN gave him a moment during the programming to address mm-hmm. this so that the people who are watching him, not just the small percentage of people who read him on Twitter, because, you know, I'm looking at it right now. I think it has, you know, a handful of retweets, but nothing compared to the audience that he had. It's 7 a.m. on WNAM.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.